The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy. And he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. All right, welcome to the BS Report. Doing a little March Madness today. Coming up a little bit later, Chad Moman, our Vegas expert. But first, a senior on the Ohio State Buckeyes, he's injured. He will have no effect whatsoever on the March Madness tournament. So naturally, we'd like to have him on. Mark Titus, what's happening?
Not a whole lot.
What injury do you have?
I tore my labrum in my left shoulder. And it was something that didn't actually require surgery immediately. So I put off surgery, and I waited until after my senior night so I could get so I could like dress one more time. And then I had surgery, and it's actually going to put me out like 6 months or something. So
this could hurt your draft status.
Yeah, it is. It is. It definitely is.
What are you going to do? I mean, the teams have already seen your, you know, they've seen your work, so maybe they don't really need to see you go through the workouts, but still.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do. I think that's what the Mr. Rainmaker video, I think that's what that was about.
Yeah,
I can't work out for them, so, you know, they're just going to have to look at that, and hopefully that will be good enough.
Well, it's all going to work out for you because Jimmy Kimmel and I have decided to adopt you. Legally, you're going to move to L.A. after you graduate, and you're going to live in both of our houses. We're going to exchange you like divorced parents. So you did this Rainmaker video on YouTube, which I tweeted. I tweeted the link for you. Really funny. How did you do that?
My best friend goes to the University of Arizona, and he's, like, real big into 80s rock. And I guess he was listening to, like, Warrant, and I don't know. He was listening to like Cherry Pie or something, and then it just went to the next track automatically, or it shuffled, or somehow the song Mr. Rainmaker started playing. And he said as soon as he heard it, he just had the idea of me just shooting outrageous shots, you know, with Mr. Rainmaker playing over the as I'm making just crazy shots in our practice gym. And he called me and like pitched the idea to me, and I thought it was an awful idea. and then I told him no like 5 times, and then he came and visited me over Christmas break. He came to Columbus, and he brought his video camera. He was really excited about it, and I don't know if it was like because it was Christmas or whatever, but I felt bad for him, so I was like, fine, we'll do it. And then you'll see how bad it is, and then you'll agree with me, and we'll delete it. And then after he put it together, it was pretty funny, so I let him keep it, and it turned out pretty well for us.
How many page views or view? What do they call YouTube views, whatever they're called. How many do you have?
There's over 250,000, which is awesome because I think Warrant has a live version of Mr. Rainmaker, and it has like 25,000 views. So they should have had me do the music video in the first place, and then it would have been better off.
Maybe there's still time. Yeah, that was good. I like that. I was very disappointed it wasn't nominated in the Oscars for short film, but maybe the deadline had passed. I'm not sure. So you got hurt, torn labrum, but yet you don't play. So how did you get hurt?
Oh, I got hurt in practice. It was a fluke play. Like most of my game, when I usually play, I'm like I just run 3-point line to 3-point line, you know, on offensive defense. So
yeah, I watch it every night with Rasheed Wallace.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. So you know, if someone drives by me, once I get inside the 3-point line, I just kind of yell help and go from there.
Nice.
So I actually got hurt. Playing not my game, you know. I somehow ended up on the block, and our center was posting me up, and I was behind him, and I'm a lot shorter than him, obviously. So as they fed the ball into the post, they passed it into him. I tried to swim around real quick, and then when I did that, he like dropped his elbow down on my shoulder, and just something happened. I couldn't feel my whole left arm, and I don't know. So
that's too bad. I mean, you might have been able to sneak into one of these games and potentially launch a three.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm disappointed.
Yeah, I played one tournament game my freshman year, and I had one rebound. So
you got some camera time the other day. I can't remember if it was you guys were watching the game that was you were the next game,
yeah.
And they showed you, and you knew you were on TV, and the other guys were pretending they weren't on the TV, but you kept looking at the camera trying to be cool, which I enjoyed immensely.
Yeah, I mean this is my fourth year doing this. I mean I'm pretty good at it at this point. we were sitting there watching the Oklahoma State Georgia Tech and. Evan Turner, we had like a little section where our team is sitting waiting for that game to go over because we had the next game or whatever. And I was sitting by Evan Turner, and I knew, you know, he's a college basketball player of the year, probably. He should be or whatever. And so I knew they're about to put him on camera, so I just started leaning in. And I don't know, I'm pretty good at that, actually. I've done that a lot. So
that's your 12th man savvy right there. You got to know. You got to know when to stick near the big guys when they're about to be on TV. It's good. I like it. So you guys got a huge break. Kansas gets knocked out by Northern Iowa, a team that really I can't figure out how they would ever lose to, but they waited 36 minutes to press, and by that time it was too late. They should just blown them off the floor with their athletes. Were you guys watching that game and just going crazy?
Yeah, we were. I mean, like, we don't really, I don't know, you don't really want to look too far ahead. You know, that's kind of how you get in trouble, and I think Kansas might have been doing that a little bit. But at the same time, I mean, for me personally, I'm just as big of a college basketball fan as anybody, even though I'm on a team. So I always cheer for the upsets, unless it's my team. You know, I don't want my team to get upset. But other than that, you know, I'm always cheering for the upsets. So, yeah, I was watching the game with some of the guys, and we were going crazy. Maybe not so much like Kansas was losing. We were just, like, in shock at you know, how it was happening. You know, like Northern Iowa, they played. They weren't scared at all, and it was just kind of – I don't know, the one guy, however you pronounce his name, was like when he shot the three with 30 seconds left, you know. And it was like a ballsy shot like that. Yeah, we were like more like amazed by the fact that, I don't know, that you would expect, I don't know, them to just, I don't know, they weren't scared, I guess. And that was kind of all of us. We kind of...
The seeds were planted for a collapse down that final 4 minutes because they turned the ball over in the backcourt, and it just felt like the game was going to get away from them. And then that kid... Ali Farsharik, whatever, however you say his name, he went and strapped on the biggest set of watermelon testicles I think I've ever seen in a basketball game. I don't even know if Larry Bird takes that shot. I was in disbelief when he took it.
I was too. That's what, and we were like, when he hit that shot, we were watching it in our locker room, and we all, we went pretty crazy. Just, I don't know if it was so much because Kansas was out, and we knew that, you know, it might be easier for us, or if it was more just because, like, just every other person watching the game was just, did he really just do that, you know? So.
Well, the other great thing is that after the game, his teammates were all like, oh, yeah, we knew that was going up. That's just who he is. There's no doubt he was going to take that shot. Yeah, I was like, wow, I kind of want that guy in my NBA team. I don't care if that's his only skill. If that guy has balls like that, that's at least a 12th man if he's going to shoot 40%. But that was amazing. So now... So you have Tennessee coming up. Now you guys are basically, you know, prohibitive favorites in that bracket that everybody was so terrified of. Are you sensing, like, obviously you can't look ahead. How hard is that to fight that off of, oh, if we do this, this will happen, and then we'll be here?
It is kind of hard. For me personally, because I don't play, so I'm just a, you know, like I said, I'm just a fan. So, you know, I'm really like an Ohio State fan who gets a really good ticket to the game and can sit on the bench, you know. So for me, I'm looking at it the same way as like all these other people that, you know, we got a lot. When the bracket first came out, it looked like we had a really tough region, but now it seems like it's gotten pretty, I guess, not as tough.
Yeah, so, you lost Kansas, you lost Georgetown. You lost Maryland. Michigan State, their best guy's hurt, or one of their best guys.
So it looks not, but I mean, I know our team, and we're definitely not looking ahead, because, I mean, Tennessee is really good, and it's cliche to say, you know, we're not looking ahead, and we got to respect our opponent, but you really do, because, I don't know, that's how you lose, I guess.
You get to watch Turner. You've been teammates with him for 3 years, and... Yeah. I remember you telling me last year, you know, this kid's really good. Like, this is somebody that's going to be a lottery pick. And I was like, he's just being nice. And then obviously it progressed that way. And then this year he's, you know, considered top 7 or 8. And now he's clearly number 2. And I think if he takes over this tournament over the next 4 games, he might even get some number 1 buzz depending on the team. Are you surprised that he has gotten this good?
I'm very surprised, because his freshman year, he hated everybody. I don't know how to really explain him his freshman year. Basically, if you'd have told me 3 years ago that he was going to be, you know, the best player in college basketball, I would have just laughed. Like, I would expected him to end up at some NAIA school because he couldn't find a coach that he got along with, and he was one of those types. And to his credit, I mean, he plays with a chip on his shoulder, and I think that's what got him into trouble his freshman year, because like his personality in the locker room was like the same way he played, you know, like he was out to get everybody. We're like, we're on your team, you know, like you don't have to hate us. We're teammates here. And he, I don't know, he was just out for only himself and just kind of, but he's definitely turned it around, you know, and in 2 years he's matured a lot and he's become a great team player and, you know, it's fun to watch.
So does he see that? Like, would you give him crap about that now?
Oh, yeah, I give him crap. We talk about it all the time. I mean, the 1 year, his freshman year, we were just shooting free throws at the end of practice, and he was rebounding for me as I was shooting free throws. And I shot one and made it or something, and he threw like a bullet chest pass back to me. So I tossed the ball back to him. I was like, can you just like bounce it, you know, like maybe a referee would, or just not throw it that hard. And he lost his mind and tried to fight me like in practice. Coach Mata gets mad at him, and you know, we all had to run sprints for it and stuff. And then like the next day in practice, he got kicked out or something. And yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that that I like to remind him that he was kind of a head case his freshman year. It's kind of funny because, you know, now he's a good kid and he's got his head on right and he's, I don't know, destined to do some pretty great things, I think.
That's funny. Well, that's a good example of how you can never count out the pedigree. Because, you know, some guys mature at different ages. For me, I was a complete butthead until I was in my late 20s. You know, and I wouldn't have been able to handle anything good that had happened to me. For him, so next year he's going to go to, you know, who knows? Like, there's a couple teams. Like, for instance, Utah has the Knicks pick, and that would be an awesome situation. Or he might go to a terrible situation. He might be on the Nets playing on an awful team. How would you think he would handle going from being on OSU and winning the majority of his games to being on a team that went 19-63.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, part of me, like, I'd want him to go on a good team, and because he's got a lot of development still left, I think, and I'd like to see him go to a good team and, like, get a you know, savvy veteran who just, you know, takes him under his wing and, I don't know, he becomes the protege or whatever and turns into a nice role player who then, a couple years later, you know, goes to another free agent, becomes a free agent, goes to another team as a star or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I like to see him do that, but at the same time, I think he would probably rather go to a bad team and be the, because I think that'd be really hard for him to go from, you know, average, getting near triple doubles just about every night here to, I don't know, being a role guy. So,
what position do you see him playing in the pros? Because he could really play three.
I think I would probably say three if it were me. I don't know. He plays point guard for us. That's kind of out of necessity, kind of out of, I don't know, just it works well for what we got. We got a bunch of really good wings. That's kind of how we play. So we threw him at point guard, and he turns the ball over a little bit, and that's kind of a knock on him. But at the same time, he's not afraid to make plays, so that's kind of good.
Well, I also think, you know, this, because Chris Paul, I remember in the tournament watching him and thinking that this guy is just better than his teammates. They haven't caught up to him. And I do think there's some of that with Turner. I think at the next level, he will be better because he has better teammates from all the things he does. And I also like, and by the way, that's no offense to you since you're one of his teammates, but you know what I mean. The thing that really intrigues me for him at the next level, and I always use the Swiss Army knife phrase because I think LeBron is like a Swiss Army knife. He can play basically four positions, whatever his team needs, whatever, if he has one of his starter teammates comes out, he can play that position. He can do whatever you want, and the team never misses a beat. And with Turner, I just feel like if he went to the right team with the fact that he could play three positions, that makes him so much more valuable than just a typical guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's definitely like that. There's a lot of games where he'll have the point guard guarding him as he brings the ball up the floor, and then he'll score, and he'll run back and guard the four on the other team.
Yeah.
On the other end of the floor, you know? And it's just, it's crazy to think that, our point guard is our leading rebounder. And, he's very versatile. And I don't think I've ever really seen something like that. So, I mean,
how does a guy like that rebound? Like, how does he get 10 rebounds a game? It's crazy.
I really don't understand that either. It's weird. Like, the ball just bounces right to him. I've heard people say, like, they got a nose for the ball or whatever. And I always just thought that was some stupid phrase someone made up. But it just seems like, to him, that's kind of how it is. It just, a shot goes up, and then he just comes out of nowhere. I don't get it, because he's not like a Dennis Rodman type that just like is crazy about it, and that's all he cares about. He just kind of goes towards the rim, gracefully jumps up, and the ball always happens to bounce right to him. So
right.
I don't know.
Well, what I liked about you guys in the second game, Georgia Tech, is it kind of came back a little bit, and Turner wasn't playing well, but the other guys helped him out. They stepped up, which I think, if you have a team that's trying to win the title in college and they clearly have a guy who's the best guy, that guy can't win every game. He's not going to play six great games in a row. You need the other guys, and it seems like you guys have that. Would you agree?
Yeah, we do. We got a bunch of, we got a couple guys that could be pros, I think, other than Evan.
And then
we got a really good shooter in John Diebler, who's, you know, that's kind of what you need. Like, I just remember Florida beating us in the national championship. That's like our Lee Humphrey, I guess. You probably don't know what I'm talking about, but.
It sounds vaguely familiar.
He didn't make it to the NBA, so you probably don't know what I'm talking about.
Right.
But yeah, they had just the token white guy who knocks down the three, you know?
Yeah.
We have one of those guys. So yeah, we got a nice big guy who blocks shots, rebounds for us. So yeah, I would say we got the right pieces, you know. I'm not saying we're gonna get it done or anything, but you know, we got a team that you look at and, you know, we have a chance, just like all the other good teams, I'd say.
How crazy is Columbus for this team? Because I have no idea. If you had to rank it from 1 to 10, I mean, obviously the football team would be a 10. Are you guys like a 9?
Yeah. Well, no, we're not a 9, I wouldn't say. I'd say we're like a 7 maybe.
Really? A 7?
Yeah. This is a football town. It's crazy. And we don't have like a lot of – we didn't have high expectations. We personally as a team did. But I don't think Columbus or Ohio really had much expectation for us. And we weren't like – hyped. In 07, when we went to the Final Four with Odin and Conley, and then we were really hyped, you know, so people were coming to all our games and going crazy for us. But, I mean, we only sold out one game this year, I think.
I mean, really?
We're kind of like we're a two seed, but we're kind of like a dark horse. It's weird. Yeah, we won the Big Ten. We won the Big Ten tournament, but, you know, a lot of people aren't. I mean, once we make it to the, if we keep moving on in this tournament, I'm sure more people are going to get behind us, but. Right now, yes. There's not. I don't know. There are people that are excited about it. You know, you got your just diehard Ohio State people, but I mean, it's not like you're driving around campus and everyone wants to talk about basketball.
So you want the headline of this to be Titus challenges people of Columbus to step up.
Yeah, exactly. Step up. I mean, shoot, yeah.
You guys should be at least getting free fast food when you go to. Oh, here, let me get your chicken sandwich.
Exactly.
So where's this next bracket? Are you in? Where are you at? Or where are you headed?
Oh, we're going to St. Louis.
Yeah. Oh, and you were in Milwaukee the last round.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite places.
Milwaukee, yeah.
I like Milwaukee. It's a fun place to go. You guys probably couldn't go out and drink dark beer and eat bad food. But St. Louis, I don't know. I've never been to St. Louis. I have no opinion. But it seems like to be there for 4 days. Well, you're probably so basketball-centric, you can't even do anything, right?
Yeah, we don't do anything anyway. It's pretty boring. I don't know. The worst part was last year we played at Miami, and I was really excited about that. We played the Hurricanes at Miami. So
how'd that go?
I was really excited to go down to South Beach, and we weren't even in Miami for 24 hours. So
that's just kind of
an example of college basketball. You get excited about going places, and then they pull the rug out from under you and tell you got film and all this other stuff. So.
Well, so if you're playing – So let's say, I know you don't want to get ahead, but let's say you win and then Northern Iowa somehow wins. And you're now playing Northern Iowa. You guys are the favorites. You guys are the team playing Hickory High, basically. Everybody's going to be rooting for Northern Iowa. That kind of sucks a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of sucks to be on the evil side, the evil favorite side.
It really does. I mean, I get it because that's how I am. When I'm watching other teams, or when I'm growing up, I'm cheering for the underdog always. But yeah, it does kind of suck when we. But I guess St. Louis isn't really that far from Ohio, so I'm hoping we get a nice fan base there. But at the same time, like everyone who's not from Ohio or not an Ohio State fan is going to be against us, and that is kind of the one thing I guess is bad about Kansas losing, because we were playing Kansas, you know, to go to the Final Four or something. Everyone would be for us, I would think. So
well, your friends now the. You're friends with Greg Oden. Maybe he can come in and him and his penis can give you an inspirational speech or something. Give the team for the Final Four. you're buddies with him. You've given him crap about that, right?
I honest to God, he changed his number, I heard, and he's not giving it out. And I have no idea what his number even is. I haven't talked to him because I don't know what to say to the guy, you know?
I mean, you got to break the ice quickly. You got to just break the ice immediately, make the joke, and move on.
But he's so heartbroken about it all that, you know, I feel
terrible for him.
So yeah, right away, like, I didn't want to, it was a bad time because, you know, he really is, like, really, And like everyone who saw it, like, oh, Greg, we feel so bad for you. You just showed everyone that you have a huge penis. Oh my God, we all feel bad for you. But for him though, he really did feel really bad about it. And
yeah,
I didn't want to say anything right away. And then I heard from somebody that he changed his number and he's not giving it out to anybody. And yeah, he's, I don't know.
It was the worst possible guy for it to happen to, because he's such a sensitive guy and he was already going through so much crap. But at the same time, I feel like it's something we can make fun of, because ultimately, you're making fun of a dude for being well endowed. I mean, that's not something that can ultimately is not insulting. Like, oh, how dare you?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, that's the best problem to have, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody's shedding tears for you, Greg Oden, with your problem. But I do feel bad for the embarrassment standpoint, just because I felt like with all the adversity he'd had, that he seemed like he was a little bit on the edge. And you'd hate to see, you know, it just seems like everything he just soaks in. He's like a sponge, you know, and it just, you can almost, he's one of those guys when you watch in person, you can read what he's thinking.
Yeah.
Where, you know, most guys aren't like that, but with him, you can just kind of feel his emotions as he's doing it. I don't know. I hope it turns around for him, but man, this is not a good first 3 years for him from an injury standpoint. The last time we talked, I think it was a year ago, your blog, Club Trillion, was, I wouldn't say taking off, because not a lot of people knew about it. And then now I think I would say it took off. How has your life changed in the past year?
My life has changed a lot. I get recognized all the time, which is still weird for me, because, you know, 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, I guess, I was just the guy with Greg Oden. And then people would, like, scratch their heads trying to figure out, you know, who's this white guy walking with Greg and his posse, you know, and they're trying to like figure out, you know, how I fit in. And now all of a sudden people know me, and it's kind of, it's weird for me still. You know, I'm starting to get used to it, but at the same time, you know, I went from bench warmer to kind of to one of the more popular guys on our team. And it's really weird considering, you know, we do have a really good team. So
was there resentment at all from the other guys?
Not really. They kind of get behind it. Most of them didn't even know about it, though. Most of them just kind of laughed it off and didn't think it was a big deal. And then I go places with them, and people recognize me, but not them. And then they start like scratching their heads, trying to figure out what's going on. And I told them, no, like my blog is starting to become a really big deal. They check it out, and they think it's all cool, and they're all they all wanted T-shirts and stuff, and they wear them around. So they're pretty cool as well.
And you got a girlfriend out of this whole thing?
Yeah. I'm dating a former Ohio State cheerleader who is in physical therapy school, so she's pretty smart too. So yeah, I mean, I'm not saying the blog did it for me, but I don't know too many cheerleaders to go after the bench warmer. So
well, way to capitalize on all the potential romantic opportunities by locking yourself down. Congratulations on that. Didn't I teach you anything? I thought you read me. No girlfriends until you're 25.
For anyone listening,
stay away from girlfriends till you're 25. Live your life. Now, this is good. She sounds like a nice lady. I don't mean to put you in an awkward spot. Just a little bit, I mean, to put you in an awkward spot.
Yeah.
So what happens to this blog after the end of your career, whenever that might
be,
the next 2 weeks?
I'm working on an exit strategy with this thing, you know? Like, I thought about, like, handing it over to somebody, but that just seems like a really bad idea because...
Yeah, I would advise against that one.
You know what I mean? Yeah, that was my first thought, but that just seems really bad the more I think about it. And then I thought about, you know... doing like a weekly profile of walk-ons around the country and, you know, talking about how they screw around, you know, not literally giving like a bio, but doing like a, I don't know, how they, basically take the game not as seriously as they should. Kind of like I have done my whole career.
Right.
You know, just kind of tell their stories, you know, like, for example, like one of the games all of us play at the end of the bench for Ohio State. If the ball bounces over to the bench, like, you know, someone slaps the ball out of bounds and it bounces towards our bench. We get it, and then someone grabs it on the bench and then passes it down the bench, and we see how many people can touch, you know. That's just our fun little stupid game that keeps us occupied. And I figure, you know, there are games like that people play all over the country at other programs. So, yeah, you know, just stupid stuff like that I could write about that other walk-ons do other places. I thought about maybe doing something like that, but even then, that didn't really seem that much fun for me, so... I don't know what we're going to do with the thing, to be honest.
Well, when you move into my guest house, we'll figure it out.
There you go.
It'll be good. I haven't told my wife yet, but, you know, you'll have your own bathroom. You'll have four TVs. I'll have to come in sometime to watch sports, but it'll be good. Good luck against Tennessee. Good luck down the road. And we might talk to you again if you make the, I don't want to jinx it, but yeah, let's say, for instance, for, by some act of God, you make the Final Four, you got to come back on.
We'll do that. We'll do that.
All right. Mark Titus, I look forward to living with you. It'll be fun.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
Talk to you soon.
All right.
Let's bring him in, our Vegas expert from ESPN, the magazine, and really, somebody who has developed to do a go-to gambling guy. Just a quick story before we bring him in. My friend House was here this weekend, and we were talking. We're in the suicide pool, and he refused to make a suicide pool bet until, or pick, until I logged onto my computer for him, found Chad Millman, and found out who Alan Boston was taking.
Oh, goodness.
So there you go. I mean, you've moved into the mainstream now with this. People now hanging on these – on these experts you're bringing in. It went well the first weekend, though.
It did go really well.
Yeah.
Well, these guys know what they're doing. I mean, they're all making a living at it, so you got to assume that when they make their picks, they do it with some sense of confidence and some information behind it, and they're not just sort of throwing darts the way most of us do when we make our picks in a bracket.
Right. And I think on Saturday, one guy just called the St. Mary's. He was just like, they're better. They're going to win.
I think that was Boston.
Yeah. And then... Did somebody at least say that the Northern Iowa was going to be close?
Yeah, Vegas Runner said Northern Iowa was going to cover against Kansas.
And then there was a third one. What happened on Sunday?
On Sunday, Boston, I know, had Purdue +2, and so he won that game, obviously.
And he loved Purdue on Friday against Siena. That was his best bet.
You know, but then I had dinner with Boston last night, and you'd think he'd lost every single game he's ever bet on in his entire life.
Seriously?
Yeah.
How come?
He just felt like he had a couple bad beats over the weekend that outweighed any sort of good bets that he had going on, and I tried to remind him, you had St. Mary's, and you had Purdue, and, you know, you were making all these great calls all weekend. I'm not really sure why you keep telling me you had some bad beats, but
What did he consider a bad beat?
I think there were just a couple games where there were last-second shots that didn't go in his favor, and games that, you know, it's as unpredictable as it is predictable. And so, you know, as he and I have talked about 1,000 times, as much logic as there is, at the end of the day, you're betting on, you know, kids that are just coming out of puberty playing in front of 20,000 people in a basketball game. So, you know, there's a lot of volatility there.
You'll be happy to know that Cousin Sal and I stepped in on a Kansas-Kentucky moneyline parlay 3-1 and got absolutely smoked.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, no, don't be sorry, because we bet a moneyline parlay. It was idiotic. I went on the podcast last week telling people not to do it, and then Sal's like, come on, Kansas-Kentucky. He wrote me into it. Bullied me.
You know what, Sal? Bad influence.
He is.
He's a really bad influence.
He's like Rob Lowe in the movie Bad Influence. And I'm James Spader, and all of a sudden I have people calling me Mick, and I've got a bad haircut, and I lost my job. That's Sal.
You know, I was next to a guy. I was at the M this weekend. I was in Vegas this weekend, and I was at the M Casino, and I was doing that in-running wagering because I'm doing a story about it for E60.
Yep.
And I was sitting next to a guy who did a teaser, and he told me he did a teaser, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Have you not been listening to the podcast? Don't you know better? So he did a teaser with Cornell to win, and then he did Texas A&M +4 against Purdue, and he was feeling great.
Yeah.
The payout was $1,000, and he's feeling fantastic about it. And then as the game goes on, he's feeling worse and worse, and he is losing it, really upset. And then he does exactly what you're supposed to do with his in-running wagering. He starts to buy money line at very high prices on Purdue to win.
To hedge.
And so he hedges bet. He ends up getting this great middle and wins everything. He ended up winning a few grand.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. He got
lucky. On Saturday, there was four and a half point underdogs where we did the money lines.
Yeah.
If gambling were legal, we didn't actually do it. Hypothetically.
You talked about it.
And St. Mary's was the first one. And then, so we hit that. It was like +175. And then BYU was the second one. And they obviously lost.
Right.
And I can't remember what the third one was, but they lost too. So it worked out. It was one of those things where you're hoping to go 2 for 3.
If
you go 1 for 3, you push, basically.
Right. I'm surprised that the St. Mary's money line was only 175.
there's a lot of action on St. Mary's. I don't think anybody bought that Villanova thing. This whole thing, I say this every year, but one of these years I'm really going to have to throw myself into college basketball, because watching these games, it made me mad that I didn't know this about Team A or this about Team B. I only need to watch a team like twice and you can kind of figure them out. But like Kansas, I should have seen that coming. I'd seen them a couple times, but I didn't realize that their coach was going to be so bullheaded and not press when he had the obvious athletic advantage, you know?
Well, that's why all the wise guys love to bet college basketball.
Right.
Because it's the greatest opportunity, because they can know the teams so much better than every bookmaker can know it, because bookmakers have to deal with six other sports for the majority of the season when college basketball is being played. So by the time the tournament comes around, these wise guys are barely even playing the tournament. You know, they're betting it, but they're not betting it the way they do. We talked about this, the way they do the conference tournaments and stuff, because the opportunities aren't as good. And it was great to watch. I was at the M watching the games with Teddy Covers, and to listen to him talk about sort of the tempo and the pace and what Chris Kramer was going to do and as a replacement for Robbie Hummel at Purdue and sort of his knowledge of the game. It's no wonder these guys that are really, really smart end up making money off it, because they know the game. They know the game, it seems, better than the coaches who are coaching the game know it.
And Kansas broke the cardinal rule of never let the underdog dictate what's happening in the game.
And they did the whole game.
Yeah. And then, you know, this is one of the many differences between men's college and women's college is in the women's tournament, the big seeds crush the little seeds every time, because they have the athletic advantage and they know this and they actually use it and they press and they just blow people out athletically and there's no variation. You never see a 15 seed beat a 2 seed or a 16 seed. It just, they lose by 40, 50 points because they just bring out the horses and they blow the teams off the court. They don't do that all the time in men's basketball.
But I also think that the variation from talent level between the mid-majors and the majors in
True.
Men's college basketball is so much tighter than it is in women's college basketball. I mean, Northern Iowa is a great team that plays very well together, and you know, they can match up with people. That's going to be a great game against Michigan State, and it's going to be fun to see how a team like that matches up against a Big Ten team. They've already shown how they can match up against the best team in the country.
You had something in one of your pieces over the Thursday to Sunday stretch about one of the guys was talking, he liked one of the coaches. He was like, this guy's headed for bigger and better things. I like backing those guys in the tournament. I think it was Ben Davidson.
Ben Jacobson.
Ben Jacobson, I'm sorry. Yeah, I think it was either him or somebody else.
No, I think it was the Murray State guy.
Yeah, that's who it was. That's who it was.
It was the Murray State guy. And I think that might have been Boston also.
And that made me think, like, that would be a fun list to do before the next tournament. Like, who are the three guys who could parlay this into a bigger job? Because it seems like two of those guys always make the Sweet 16. And everybody goes, oh, this guy, oh, Dick Vitale, because, oh, the baby, this guy, there you go, for a big job, baby.
You know what's sad about that?
What?
If I were one of those guys, I'd seriously reconsider if it's worth it. Because you look at the guy at Iowa, Todd Licklider, who was, I think he was at Butler before he went to Iowa.
Yeah.
He could have been at Butler for 30 years as a guy who's going to be in the tournament every year, a top 25 team, yet he left that mid-major, went to Iowa, now he's looking for a job. It's the luster's off the rose.
Didn't the Gonzaga guy, that's basically been his mantra.
Yeah.
He never left. He
right.
just was like, screw it. I'll just be the John Wooden of the WAC.
And he's smart because his boss left, and now his boss is coaching Long Beach State.
Randy Bennett and St. Mary's, same thing. I think that's turned into a really good program. And, I think people forget that sometimes when coaches switch. When they switch colleges, sometimes you don't get all the assistants. It takes a while to kind of institute the way you think and the kind of guys you want. It's not something that turns over in a year.
Right. Well, the system is very important, and it takes 4 years, I think, before you finally have your system implemented and
yeah.
the guys that you know can play your style of basketball. Except during those 4 years, you've got to be weeding out all the guys that were already there, and you might be going 12 and 17 every year.
And then if you have bad luck with one big recruit, you know, and you're also trying to make that four-year thing happen, then all of a sudden it's year five and you haven't won anything and everybody's like, oh, you suck.
Right. They're like,
actually,
you're not really as good as you were when you were at Butler. What happened?
Yeah. No, I'm the same guy, actually. I just had some bad luck. Let's talk about round three. the Sweet 16.
Let's talk about it.
Who do you have? Who are the sharps liking?
Well, this was an interesting. There's a lot of interesting games going on. This Washington West Virginia game is very interesting because West Virginia, the Big East, has not shown any value at all during the tournament. Washington is one of those teams that has actually shown up and played very well, and at a time when most people, at least on the sharp side, were undervaluing the Pac-10. They didn't expect, they expected a lot out of the Pac-10 when other people weren't. The Big East hasn't shown up at all. But now all of a sudden you're seeing the line for West Virginia actually climb a little bit, because I think people are thinking West Virginia can do anything Washington can do, and then they can do the opposite thing as well. So if it becomes a half-court game, West Virginia can do that. If it becomes a game of athletes, West Virginia can do that. And plus, they just love Bob Huggins. They think he's a great, great coach, and this could be his chance to get to that next level. So that line has been going up a little bit. Personally, I'm surprised because Washington has shown. I know the guys have, more than one guy has told me that he's changed his power rating on Washington pretty dramatically just from this first weekend, which is something that happens pretty often because you get a sense of a team and its personality during the NCAA tournament. And so he said he told me he changed it. I think it was a point or a point and a half, which at this point in the year, after you've seen 30 games, to change your power rating by a full point is a pretty dramatic move.
Yeah.
And so Washington has impressed people, which is why I'm surprised that the West Virginia money is going up. It's entirely possible that, come Saturday or come Thursday, I think, the number comes back down a little bit because it will have been bet up so much that the wise guys start buying back. So that's one game that's interesting.
How do they feel about Cornell, Kentucky, which has to be one of the weirdest Sweet 16 matchups ever?
Well, a lot of guys I know are going to play Cornell because Kentucky, to them, is a team that's been too inconsistent to really garner, full-throttle national championship contention. Most of the guys I know, they like Syracuse. They like West Virginia. They're starting to like Duke a little bit, which is surprising. Kentucky doesn't get in that conversation because most guys aren't huge fans of Calipari, and most guys aren't fans of teams that have young guys playing. And there's a combination of inconsistency and a combination of a lack of discipline in coaching style that they just don't trust. So at least as far as an against-the-spread matchup, they're liking Cornell quite a bit. Because if you can't stop Cornell from scoring, then you can't win the game. And they're shooting from half court with perfect form and getting nothing but net and looking like, they could do it all day, every day from wherever they are. So it's a hard game to judge, actually. But a lot of guys are leaning to Cornell.
It does seem like Cornell was put on the earth to upset this specific Kentucky team.
Yes.
Because this Kentucky team is just dying to lose a game where they shoot 10 for 24 from the line and make dumb plays, and the other team's hitting threes, and the crowd gets behind them, and then John Wall has to take over in the last 5 minutes, but maybe he misses it. I could see the game unfolding like that in my head. I can also see the scenario where Kentucky just blows them out.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, then you've covered all the scenarios.
Because it really feels like those two. I don't feel like this is going to be Kentucky's up by 6-8 the whole game, never really a doubt. Like, I feel like they blow them out or Cornell wins. It's one of those.
Well, then you don't think if Kentucky wins, they blow them out. If Kentucky wins, they'll cover, is what you're saying.
I'm saying I would take Kentucky -8.5, or I would just bet the Cornell money line and say, screw it, +400. I'm in.
I would just do that.
Put it this way. Is there if they played this game four times, would Cornell win one of them? Yeah, I kind of feel like they would, actually.
By the way, you've defined a value bet. That's exactly that's how you have to look at every one of these, odds plays, is if this game is played X number of times, would the underdog win at least one of those games? And then if you think so, then you make that play.
That's why I love St. Mary's on Saturday, because I felt like after watching them in Villanova, and it, for some reason, those were two of the teams I had seen a few times. I just felt like that was a 50-50 game. And maybe Villanova was going to win, but I just felt St. Mary's had an equal chance. And those are always the best ones if you can get, the +200 or the +250 or whatever. And I feel the same way about St. Mary's Baylor, which that line came down a little bit. But I think St. Mary's is going to beat Baylor.
See, I don't agree.
Why?
Because I think Baylor presents a much different matchup for St. Mary's than its previous two games, in that neither of those teams had great inside games. And Baylor has one guy who can control, you know, St. Mary's potentially best player. And so, plus, I've just been a fan of Baylor all year. They've gotten better in all the numbers that matter all year. You know, they've been covering the spread by a pretty good margin all year. I mean, I know St. Mary's is making a great run, and I know they sort of have a lot of Cinderella behind them, and I actually think their guards are underrated and they can control the game from guard play. But I think that Baylor is long and tall and plays such good defense that it's going to make it difficult for St. Mary's in a half-court matchup.
Interesting. My favorite one is Kansas State. I just like them. I think they're good. And Xavier is one of those. They're getting a lot out of Crawford. And you keep hearing about he's mercurial, he's enigmatic, he's finally playing team ball. I don't trust those guys.
I
know
he
did it for two games.
Oh,
I totally agree. And I think he's been, if you're talking about guys just from a draft standpoint, I think he's been the one that did the most for himself.
God,
in the
so
first
funny.
Two games.
It's so funny you say that, because when I saw him make that play the other night that they kept rerunning on SportsCenter, I thought to myself, he is rising in the draft so quickly every single time they show that highlight.
Yeah. Well, he has translatable skills to
yes.
the next level, because I could easily see him as a swingman who makes threes and plays above the rim and does all those things. And I got to say, I think Pullen on Kansas State is like that. I was exchanging emails with Chad this weekend, Chad Ford,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, is Pullen even in your top 100? And he's like, no, but, you know, he might be climbing. And I'm like, man, I know he's a 5'11 two guard, but why couldn't this guy be Aaron Brooks? You know, this guy, he's a gamer, he plays hard,
right.
He can shoot threes. Like, this is a guy that I would want on my team if I was in a battle. And
well,
I think he could do a lot for himself in the next couple of games.
The problem with Kansas State is that, and they've also been one of those teams this year that has really covered the spread by a wide margin. And so they've been a pretty safe bet against the spread in all facets. But I think there's a little bit of an untrustworthy factor for Frank Martin's team right now. They've never gone this far, or they're playing as well as they ever have in the tournament for him. And the wise guys just generally feel like these teams that are very athletic but sometimes play inconsistently and undisciplined, they're wary of betting them. Like when I was talking to guys today, most guys I know were passing on the game. They felt like they had their number right at what the spread is at 4.5 or 5, and they weren't, you know, they're not going to bet if there's not an inefficiency there. They don't feel
so. They don't trust Angry Frank.
Like, they don't.
I don't either.
Yeah.
But I like that matchup for them. I just think I don't know.
And
by the way, I've been wrong. I've been wrong for 2 weeks. So take Xavier then.
If you were allowed to bet legally, do you like it enough to bet Kansas State at 5 right now?
No, I would do. I see. This is bad, but I would tease that parlay the West Virginia minus 240 with another game, because I think that West Virginia is a lock. I don't think they lose to Western. And I hate using the word lock with college basketball and 19-year-old kids, but I just think they're good. I'd be very shocked if they lost.
I think it's a gambling problem.
Wow. Well, I'd like to think about various scenarios to wager on. If that's a problem, so be it. So what do the Sharps think the best value is out of the first 8 games? I mean, out of the next 8 games.
Well, a lot of guys are talking to me about Cornell.
Cornell money line, not the 8.5.
Right. And, okay. If they can get it back to, you know, right now the line is moving down. So it started at 9.5, now it's at 8.5. So you can see a lot of the sharp money came in on Cornell at 9.5, and it came in on Cornell at 9. If it comes back around, and there's actually a Vegas line that has it at 9, but if it comes back around through the course of as it gets closer, and it pops maybe to 9.5 again, you're going to see people start taking that bet again, and it'll go back down. But, you know, you never know what the public is going to do at this particular time, because Cornell is playing so well. So if Cornell gets back to sort of 9.5, I think you'll see guys taking it. Michigan State, Northern Iowa is a game that a lot of guys are talking about as value for Northern Iowa. Obviously, well, Michigan State is favored by 1.5 right now. They're without their best player, who's, you know, tore his Achilles and is out for 6 months. He was their leading scorer, their leading minutes played. I mean, he was their go-to guy. And there's a perception that Michigan State is getting this number because it's Michigan State, because it's an NCAA powerhouse, because it's a major championship program going against Northern Iowa. And even if Northern Iowa beat Kansas, there's still a perception that it's Northern Iowa. And so there's value in this game because a lot of guys think that Northern Iowa can handle anything Michigan State can do right now and that it's a difficult team to match up against. And so they don't give away possessions. They don't take bad shots. Fundamentally, they're, you know, defensively sound. So, and Michigan State, honestly, against the spread, has been horrible this year. They, you know, they've had an, in the sweat barometer that I did every week during the college basketball season, they had a negative number every single week. They were the worst of the top 25 teams again, in margin against the spread, meaning by how often they covered the spread. So that's a great bet. If you are, you know, feel like Northern Iowa is a team that is not getting respected because Michigan, because of the perception of Michigan State, then, you know, guys are going to think about that. And that line actually hasn't moved at all, which is surprising to me because I feel like Northern Iowa is not getting nearly the respect it deserves in that particular game, especially with Michigan State's best player being out.
You know what my favorite bet I think is? You can bet Cornell plus 800 to win that regional.
That's not a bad bet.
So if you like them, the plus 400 in Kentucky, you basically just do the plus 800. The line for the next game won't be as high.
Right.
So you're just bankrolling, hoping they go two in a row. Interesting way to play it.
I like it.
Another one I like.
Yeah.
Northern Iowa, plus 350 to win that regional.
Hmm.
So they're basically even this time. And
right.
Let's say they play Ohio State. What's the line for that game? Ohio State by five?
Probably.
So if you parlayed those two, that would probably average out to, well, probably be plus 350 anyway.
Well, let's think about that. Would Ohio State be favored by five over Northern Iowa?
Well, and what if they lose to Tennessee? That game's a pick 'em then.
Right. Well, that, yeah, completely.
I'm with you on Northern Iowa. I watched both of those teams twice this weekend and or last weekend. And especially now that Michigan State has one of their guys down. I wasn't really sold on Michigan State anyway. I thought they were very lucky to get out of that Maryland game.
I haven't been sold on Michigan State all year. I've been fading. You have to fade Michigan State the entire year. You get to the tournament and guys get anxious because they believe in the aura of Tom Izzo. You know, every single wise guy I spoke to was like, I'm not betting against Michigan State. And I'm like, well, what did you do all year? I bet against Michigan State. But in the tournament, it's entirely different. I think that's what you're seeing in this spread right now is that there's so much respect for Tom Izzo, no matter who he's got playing on his team, that, you know, it doesn't matter what Northern Iowa's done. So If I were playing a game, I'd play Northern Iowa plus the 1.5 against Michigan State.
Were you in a sports book for the Northern Iowa-Kansas game?
Yes, I was.
Describe for me the scene when that kid takes and makes the three with 30 seconds left.
Oh, it's nuts. It's completely insane.
Was that one of your all-time loudest Vegas moments ever?
It was. You know, what was amazing is I was in the sports book doing these TV interviews all weekend. And so we were set up with cameras and lights and whatever in the middle of the sports book. And all of a sudden, we'd be interrupted in the interview because there'd be this crazy screaming. And that was one of the games that there was this crazy screaming, that in the Michigan State game. And people were going nuts. You couldn't hear yourself ask questions. You couldn't hear yourself talk. You just had to stop everything, shut the cameras down, and start watching the games because it was so exciting and incredible.
Yeah, because the Maryland ending was an all-timer. You basically had, what, four buzzer beaters in the last 30 seconds or whatever?
Right.
That must have been awesome. But I still think that kid hitting that, Ali Fajarik, whatever his name is, that kid hitting that three at that time in the game when it really seemed like Kansas was going to come back. And I'm sure some people had Kansas thrown into parlays where they just were going to get murdered if Kansas lost.
Of course.
I mean, do you think anybody even had the Northern Iowa money line? Was there a money line?
So, of course, there's a money line for all of these. But
what was the spread on that game?
What was the spread on that
game?
It
was like plus 9 or 10? Yeah, so they must have been like plus 400.
Yeah.
Wow.
I really want to name my intramural softball team after the kid on Northern Iowa who keeps hitting all these threes.
Ali Fajarik?
Yeah, that's what I think we should call ourselves. I can't get any momentum behind it.
Joe Mead,
Yes.
How do you pronounce his last name? I should get it right once before the end of this podcast.
I think we should. I'm looking it up now.
He deserves that much.
I thought it was Ali Farouk Manesh.
Yeah.
Farouk Manesh, that's what it was.
Great name for a great shooter.
I've now turned into the middle-aged radio host who missays everybody's name. I used to hate Eddie Edelman for this. Yeah, he is fantastic. That was one of my favorite games that I've ever lost money on.
Well, it's good to have that category.
Yeah, it was one of those where it's like, all right, that really hurt, but at the same time, I'm just glad I was able to watch that and have a rooting interest in it, even though I feel like I've been kicked in the stomach.
When I was betting this weekend, I had a halftime bet on A&M and Purdue. I forget what the halftime total of that game was, but whatever it was, I was in comfortable position to cover that halftime with 10 seconds left in the first half, and then Purdue, it's a three-pointer. And I'm like, all right, it's less than 10 seconds left. A&M, they're going to try something, but, you know, it's going to be a wild shot. It's got a pretty good chance of working out for me. And then with 1/10 of a second left, that guy gets fouled on a three-point play. And I'm looking at the screen. I'm like, are you kidding me that on a three-pointer with 1/10 of a second, I'm 1/10 of a second away from covering, like, four, because I'm doing this in-running thing, and I just kept betting the under. And, like, every time he came up, I was betting the under. And I lost it because he made two free throws. It makes you realize how difficult this could be and why I don't have the liver to do this on a regular basis in Las Vegas for a living. I just could never, ever do it. I don't know how these guys do it.
Well, I always called it the 90% theory. Like, you have a chance on 90% of your bets, and the 10th one, you're just going to get screwed.
Yep.
So the goal is to either go 6-3 or 7-2 on the 90%.
Well, what's also interesting is you only remember the times you do get screwed.
Yeah.
And you never remember the time that you covered because, you know, BYU Florida went into double overtime.
Yeah.
You know, you never remember those. You only remember the times you got screwed.
What was the worst beat that you heard of when you were in Vegas this weekend? Was there one?
I didn't hear any of really bad beats, but I heard about the guys who won about $40,000 on Purdue when Purdue won the game, which
really?
Obviously it would have been a bad beat if they had lost. But yeah, there were a whole bunch of guys there, and they won about $40,000 on that game. I think each of them. Like, I don't think it was, you know, one guy. It was like a group of guys who have a ton of money, and they came in and, you know, they won big.
Should I go to Vegas for the first 4 days of the NBA playoffs? And hang out with some of your sharps?
It just seems less interesting. The NBA playoffs, you could do it because it's, you know more about the NBA. I just feel like the NBA doesn't have as much excitement around betting as, you know, it's going to feel like, to me it would feel like, you know, the first 4 days of the regular season for the NBA.
So you don't think the sharps have specific opinions heading into the first round?
Oh, of course they do.
More geared to the NCAA.
Yeah, of course they do, but I don't think the excitement will be there.
Hmm. I beg to differ.
Then you should go. You should do it.
I'm already developing opinions. The Milwaukee Bucks in round one are really intriguing all of a sudden.
You should run with that theory.
I'm thinking about it.
It's all a good idea.
So when are you going to post? Thursday morning? You're going to post your big guns?
I'm posting today part one of the Sweet 16 brackets, which will cover... Who did I cover in that one? I think Cornell, Kentucky, Washington, West Virginia, St. Mary's, and Baylor, and Purdue, and Duke.
Oh, wait. We're taping this for Wednesday. So by Wednesday, all this stuff will be up.
By Wednesday, you'll have the South Regional and the East Regional up. That'll be up. And then on Wednesday afternoon, at the latest, I'll have the Midwest and the West, part two of the Sweet 16 that I'm doing with Boston.
Maybe a quote from Alan Boston about what it's like to become an internet cult hero. I'd like his take on that.
He's excited about it.
Yeah, but he has a great last name, which I think is one of the reasons he's been so lucky.
Well, he's a great Boston guy.
He's from Boston?
Yeah.
Oh, so it's a pseudonym.
It's like Cher. It's like, you know, if you go to Vegas and ask for him by his last name, no one is going to know who the hell you're talking about. It's not like he's not hiding by being Alan Boston. That's what he's been called for 30 years.
Gotcha.
Boston guy, great Boston accent.
Oh, I might have to meet him at some point in my life.
He's a good guy. You like him.
I'm going to have to arrange it. I can buy him a steak, and he can give me weird tips.
He doesn't eat red meat.
I'll buy him some fish. buy him some snapper. All right, Chad Millman, good luck. I hope this week is as successful as last week for your little tips.
I hope so, too.
All right, talk to you soon.
Talk to you later.
Target the sound off. Whoa!
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.